I think we've got about one more week, and we will hopefully be through all of our technical challenges. Jimmy went out and bought a bunch of microphones. Excuse me for just a second. I am going to, we're playing with some things right now, so. All right, there we go. Perfect. All right. So, today, I want to, and I was joking with the Huffmans, and I'm, you know, it's amazing how God works this stuff out. I was joking with the Huffmans because they said something about, hey, you know what? And I'm glad they put this in the announcement. Jennifer said, Jimmy called on just the right day because we just so happen to be having a really, really good little season here where things are kind of going right. And it's like, amen, I don't have anything bad. Nothing's going, nobody's, you know, the dog is fine, the house is fine, the car is fine, that kind of stuff, right? Like, you know how you go through life and you go through these challenges. Sometimes it just feels like week after week and day after day there are struggles. And you're like, you know what? No, it's actually been a good week. We're feeling pretty good. And that shouldn't be so rare as Christians. And our walk with God, that really shouldn't be something that's such a challenge. But sometimes, let's be honest, it is. You know, if we're just going to be honest, it is. And one of the things I want to talk about today, and those of you who have really been singing from the heart, you've probably picked up on this theme in our song today that we've been singing. I want to talk a little bit about hope. Now, I experienced something earlier this week, and we talked a little bit about this during our Wednesday night Bible study, during our devotional, talking about being cynical. People who are cynical, right? And it was interesting because this happens like clockwork. You can like literally set a watch to this. I was noticing all day long they were doing an inauguration on Wednesday, right? And they did the swearing in and gave a speech and all this kind of stuff. And you got all the commentators and talking heads. And immediately after, like, that was done, you go through all the pageantry and all the, you know, oh, look at the purple dress and, oh, and Bernie Sanders and his mittens, right? All the memes. It was great. I loved it. Well, anyway, here's the thing. You go through all of that, and then immediately afterwards, it doesn't take long for you to get on Twitter or Facebook or here, where all you got to do is flip a couple channels and somebody's saying, yeah, well, his policies are going to be negative for this. This is going to be bad. And here's the thing. This was 4 years ago, too. As soon as Donald Trump came in, immediately it was like the pageantry and everybody's ballroom dancing and they're going through all the things. And then you flip a couple channels and you see some stuff on media and everybody's like, oh, this is going to be terrible for this. This is going to be bad for that. There's just so much negativity, right? We just live in a totally cynical society. And so it was interesting as we were talking about this on Wednesday during our devotion. I was like, you know what? As Christians, one of the things that we sometimes have to remind ourselves is that being cynical, being negative, constantly doubting and always looking at the glass half empty is actually not just something that's a characteristic that is kind of bad. It's unbecoming. It's not particularly attractive. But it is actually not of God. God does not, if we are truly his followers, we've accepted, we understand where our hope lies, then actually being negative and cynical is not where we should be in our walk. There will be challenges and tough times, and obviously, you know, we were talking about this where you got to be a realist, right? You got to look at the facts, and you don't want to, you know, look at everything through rose-colored glasses, but the fact is, being negative, being cynical, constantly doubting, always looking at the bad stuff, that is actually not of God. And I want to look at this a little bit today. I want to take you through a little journey with me. We're going to kind of do this in two parts, part of it today and part of it next week. I've given the title of the lesson today, A New Hope. A New Hope. Now, those of you who are familiar with Star Wars will know, Tom figured it out immediately. Yes, A New Hope. This is actually the first movie that came out. What was that, 1977, I think it was? A New Hope. Now, here's the thing. It wasn't actually called A New Hope back then because it was the first of the Star Wars movies. You know, you know, that's when we all got introduced to Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi and, you know, talking robots and, you know, Princess Leia talking into this garbage can that was recording her, you know. Like, this was Star Wars, right? And now, interestingly enough, this was the, if you read the books and you go back and look, this was actually not the first movie, even though it came out first, it was produced first. This was not the first movie because they came out later with what was called the prequels, right? And everybody's like, ooh, this is amazing. So you go back and then they started with episode one, The Phantom Menace, and then it goes on. So technically, the movie that came out first that we saw in 1977 was actually the fourth in the series. And then from there, it went on to The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Now they've got all these new ones and people are complaining because they've been bought out by Disney and it's not quite the same. But I set all this up and say this because when we think about hope and what I want to talk about today, we're going to look in the book of Hebrews where there is a very similar thing that's going on with this church. They're being persecuted. They're facing a lot of adversity. Everything is kind of, you know, uncertain and a little bit scary. And I want to look at this. You follow me, you know, as we go through this, you'll see where I'm going. But sometimes we just need some hope. More importantly than just we need some hope, it isn't like you just go to a food line and just go check it, you know, you just go grab some. No, we need to understand we already have the hope that we need, but sometimes we need to be reminded of the hope that we have. We need to be reminded where our hope is. Because when we look at a dark and negative and a world that's in pain and all the awful things that we see in our personal lives, maybe, or we see it on the news, we see it happening in this country, we see it happening all over the world, we look and we think there's so much wrong. And the answer to fixing it is not just, well, let's just, you know, be, you know, Pollyannish. It's not just, oh, let's just look for the silver lining. But it is incumbent upon us as Christians to remember that we don't have to be down and negative and cynical. Not because the reality is going to change necessarily, but because we know where our hope lies. I want to start by looking at Hebrews chapter 10. There's a verse there, starting verse 19. It says, therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened up, open for us through the curtain, that is the body. And since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. Let me repeat that there. Let us hold unswervingly to the faith that we profess, for he who is promised is faithful, that hope that we profess. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. There's two little things here I want to make sure that we connect right here towards the very end where he says not giving up meeting together. Why does this matter? Why is he talking about not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing? See, meeting together wasn't just like how we come here and, you know, get together for morning worship or we get together for our meetings and Bible studies and things like that. No, meeting together for them was actually something quite different. They actually were at risk when they were meeting together. There was actually some danger. There was actually some real life sacrifices that were being made. There were some calculations. I'm actually doing this, and whether, you know, you can maybe measure out the percentages and say, okay, how much of a calculated risk am I making here? Is this am I putting myself at 10% risk of getting hurt or being beaten or being, you know, imprisoned or killed? Or is it 70%? Whatever it was, the point is, them meeting together wasn't like how we do in a free society. It's actually kind of similar to like today. Some people say, you know what? Yes, I understand it. I may not get COVID, but you know what? I'm going to order my food and have it delivered because I can't take the risk. I can't take the chance. I'm sick. I'm doing, you know, cancer treatment and my immune system is down. And so I'm only saying that to give us a parallel. That's kind of what it was like. It's not apples to apples. But when we think about the risk that they were putting themselves in by meeting together. So when he says, don't give up meeting together, he's not just talking about laxed Christians and people who aren't particularly committed. He's saying, no, there's actually a price that you may have to pay. You might actually go to jail. You might actually lose your job. You could be shut out of the market. You could actually be put to death. And so this church, he's telling them to not give up meeting together. He's saying be vigilant. Continue to do this. But it's the why he's telling them to do it. And I go back to that where he says, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. I go back to my little Star Wars analogy because as chaos is breaking out and Darth Vader is gaining ground, and as he's taking over all these little planets and these different galaxies and he's building the Death Star, Princess Leia sends out this message. She encrypts it in this little robot, R2-D2, right? And she sends this message out to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Why? Because she knows that Obi-Wan Kenobi is this Jedi. And she's like, you're our only hope, right? And, you know, you have to go back. If you haven't seen the movie, first of all, where you been? But assuming you haven't seen the movie, go watch the movie. But the point is that she is sending this out, but it's not. It wasn't just out of desperation. It wasn't just out of, well, you know what? We got nothing else. You know, we got nothing to lose. No, there was actually some hope. She believed that all the things she had been told about Jedis and the Force and all that, she actually believed that there was some hope there, that something was going to happen. See, when we think about what's going on in our world around us, when we think about how COVID has impacted us, when we think about the changes and the shifts that we're seeing in the world around us, when we think about what's going on in our own families, sometimes it can be easy to give in to cynicism and doubt, faithlessness. We give up hope and we say, oh, well, you know, but I'm just being realistic. I'm just, you know, it's not that I'm, you know, hopeless. I'm just being a realist. I'm just, you know, seeing what is in front of me and accepting it. And what we see here in this passage, he's saying, no, but God is faithful. Look back. Look at how many times he's been faithful over the years. Look at how many times he's delivered you personally. Look at how many times. Remember how many times he's come through in different spots. Sometimes we forget this very thing. We continue to be joyful in our hope because he is faithful in an unfaithful world. People let you down. Men let you down. Situations just don't materialize. We want things to happen and they don't work out. And then we become jaded because we forget that God is faithful. That where you are right now, what you're dealing with right now, the things that may be causing you some concern, the things that may be giving you a little bit of heartburn, the things that are inconveniencing you, the rejection that you're dealing with. We have to understand that God is faithful, that he's going to come through, that he has a reason. And that's easy to say. and intellectually and conceptually, we understand that. But as Christians, do we believe? Do we live lives that say, I know that God is faithful, so I'm not going to give up hope. I know he's coming. My son, you know, recently they've started back the hybrid school now, so he goes on Thursday and Friday. And my son does this thing where he's a little different than Kendall. She goes on Monday and Tuesday. So Thursday and Friday, my son, he comes outside and he immediately pulls out his phone and he says, Dad, are you still coming? Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, what else I got to do, son? I can't go home without you. You know, your mom's not going to let me in. There will be no peace if I show back up here at the house and you're not with me. So, of course, I'm coming to get you. But in his mind, in his 11-year-old mind, he'll be 12 in a month, saving money up. He wants presents. But in his little 11-year-old mind, he's thinking, I'm out here. I'm alone. And I recognize these people. There's a couple of friends. We're all wearing masks. They stand out in this field waiting for the cars to come pick him up or getting on the bus. And he texts and he's thinking, Dad, are you coming? Now, my daughter, she never even texts. She doesn't ask. She has the number. She texts for everything else. She never asks if I'm coming because she knows I'm coming. Even if I'm late. You know, if I'm too late, sometimes she'll call and say, well, hey, what's up? You know, you said you were coming at 3 o'clock. It's, you know, 3:15 or, you know, something like that. And there have been a couple of times where we had a mix-up where I thought mom was going to get her and it actually was my turn or something like that. But here's the thing. Sometimes we're like kids. And we forget how much our parents value us and love us. And in their little minds, they don't appreciate, they don't understand. There's no way I would leave you. There's no way I would forget about you. It would literally take death or an act of God to keep me from getting to you. And that's us as parents. That's us as human beings. The God of the universe is faithful. And it doesn't matter if it's raining or snowing or cold or hot. If it's dark. If it's light outside, I'm coming for my children. Is that the God that you have placed your hope in? Is that the God, when it talks about the hope that we profess, is that the God that you serve? When we go through dark times, I've shared this probably a couple of times, and I know you all have heard it, but you know, we had that tornado that happened last year. And yesterday it was interesting because the wind was blowing really hard. You could just hear stuff, you know, knocking on the, you know, outside the siding and stuff like that. And right after that tornado, like all it had to be was a slight breeze. And Kendall was panicked. William, he was panicked too, but he was too big to be super panicked. You know, he had to be the man, you know, he had to be a big boy. But Kendall was like, forget all this maturity stuff. I am a baby. And I'm going to crawl on your lap and I'm going to slide up between you and mommy in the bed because I'm scared. That tornado shook her. And I would tell her it's going to be okay, but she's still afraid. And so what do they do? What do my kids do? What all kids do? They run to their parents. They run to safety. They run to their grandparents. They run to the adult. They say, protect me. I'm scared. Do we, in times of trouble, go back to God knowing that he is faithful and he is going to take care of us? This I found interesting. This is The Empire Strikes Back. Most of you will recognize this guy. His name is Yoda. He comes up in the second one, actually the fifth one, but again, go back and watch it if you don't know. But this is The Empire Strikes Back. And Luke Skywalker is sent to continue his training. He needs to become a Jedi, so he goes to train with Yoda. Now, Yoda has kind of branched out and become his own thing, right? They even have a baby Yoda now. Anybody who's not keeping up with The Mandalorian? I know some of you are thinking, no, I'm not. But baby Yoda, if you're wondering, this is what baby Yoda looks like. I was kind of wondering, why does he have gray hair? if he's a baby, but apparently that's what Yodas do, whatever they're called. But, like, it was interesting. Yoda said something that he mentioned in the earlier part of the series, in the prequels, and something he said again when he was talking about Luke Skywalker and training these Jedis, because there was something very important about Jedis. They had to purge themselves, if you will. They had to show themselves to be able to overcome a very important thing. That was fear. And he had this quote. It says, "Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering." Now, most of you know I'm not really big on quoting Yoda here from the pulpit, right? I don't think we should, you know, canonize Yoda and put him in the Holy Scriptures. But there's a larger point here that Yoda was making when he was talking about Luke Skywalker. And he said, because he saw the same thing, knowing then that it was his father, Darth Vader, he saw the same thing, that they were giving into this fear. They were giving into this hopelessness. They were giving in to this anger, this hurt that they were experiencing. And I bring this up because we can look at something like that and think, well, that's fiction. But what we see here is the same principle in the scriptures. When we think about what's going on in our world around us, how does God view us being fearful? What does God actually think about somebody who claims him, who's supposed to be his ambassador, who is afraid, who feels hopeless, who lives a life where they know the power of God? They know how his Holy Spirit moves and changes their lives, and yet they still live a life of doubt and faithlessness and cynicism. Because, see, sometimes we can just look at those again as characteristics and forget those are things that are unacceptable to God. He's saying, how can you be cynical? How can you doubt when you know who I am? I want to look at a passage because, just like we were looking in Hebrews 10 there, I want to kind of go back here and I want to take us back, again, going with the Star Wars thing. There was more to the story that we knew in 1977 when Star Wars came out, because, you know, we just show up in 1977, we see Star Wars, they're shooting and they're fighting and there's robots and, you know, all this stuff going on. But we didn't know the backstory. I want to look at the backstory here. When we read Hebrews 10, it talks about this hope that we profess. I want to go back to Hebrews 3. Because there's an important part of this is that we set up that we need to understand about why he's talking to them about not giving up meeting together, about the hope that we profess and how we should live it out. Hebrews chapter 3, starting verse 7, it says, "So, as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did in the rebellion. During the time of testing in the wilderness, where your ancestors tested and tried me, though for 40 years they saw what I did. That is why I was angry with that generation. I said, their hearts are always going astray, and they have not known my ways. So I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest. See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. We have come to share in Christ, if indeed we hold our original conviction firmly to the very end. As has just been said, today if you hear my voice, do not harden your hearts as you did in the rebellion. Who were they who heard and rebelled? Were they not all those Moses led out of Egypt? And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies perished in the wilderness? And to whom did God swear that they would never enter his rest, if not to those who disobeyed. So we see that they were not able to enter because of their unbelief. There's an important point of reference that we have to make here when we talk about hope, when we talk about being faithless and how those things are not reconcilable. You can't know God. He's saying you can't see what he did coming out of Egypt, how he delivered his people. He heard their cries. You can't know all the ways in which God protected and loved them and then still be faithless and then still doubt and then still be cynical, still be skeptical when you've seen the might of God. When you've watched the ways in which he has changed your life and the life of others. He makes this interesting parallel, this comparison. And it isn't just, you know what, being doubtful and being cynical and having just a general hopelessness. That's just an ugly quality. He says, no, this is rebellion. This is disobedience. This is something that God was angry about. Angry enough that he said, you know what? I'm so angry about this, you're never going to enter my rest. Sometimes we think about things that displease God. We immediately rush to the low-hanging fruit, the easy ones like sexual immorality and adultery and stealing and murder and all these vile things that are equally upsetting. Don't get me wrong. I'm not encouraging you to somehow dismiss those things as though they are not important. But we don't often put faithlessness and hopelessness and doubt. We don't often put those in the same category. We don't often see those as being nearly as infectious and degrading to our walk with God. Because sometimes we justify it and we think, well, yeah, you know, but it was kind of bad. Things are kind of terrible. I have been in a bit of a rough patch. I am seeing a lot of things. And yet, we're constantly being called back to look at God. Basically, what he's saying is, has God ever left his people? Has he ever not delivered? Has he ever not come through? Then why are you doubting him now? Why are you doubting him in your own life when you've seen what he's done? It's something that angers God because, not just because it's like, you know, anger in the sense that he gets mad and he wants to retaliate. No, it is offensive to God when he has shown us over and over and time again how much he loves us, how much he's willing to endure with us, and yet we still don't have hope. We're still doubtful. It is offensive. It would be as offensive, I was talking about my kids and picking them up, but it's kind of like when, you know, my kids know that there's going to be food in the refrigerator. They know they got something to eat. I'd be kind of angry if, you know, the kids, well, let me rephrase it. I do get kind of angry when the kids keep coming to me talking about food as though I'm not going to bring them food. Why would I let you starve? This is offensive to God as much as he has been good to us. And sometimes we really have to put hopelessness in its place. It's not just something that describes a person, a man or woman of weak character or maybe, you know, they're nearsighted and they don't really see things. No, it is actually offensive to God. Cynicism, doubt, wavering in our convictions, wavering in our faith are all akin to rebellion against God. You know, I heard of something very interesting in talking about the events that happened a couple weeks ago. Sometimes when we think of rebellion, we think of like some country that's being overthrowing some dictator or something in some country in South America or Central Africa or something, you know, there's some mean, evil dictator and they're having some insurrection. We think of rebellion. It was interesting because some people even compared what happened a couple Wednesdays ago, to rebellion against the government. People made that argument, and you can see where that argument comes from. This is another example of rebellion. When you have people to go on strike, teachers, whole teachers' unions and these groups say, you know what, we just don't feel like we're being paid enough. We're not getting proper treatment. We're not getting the resources that we need to be able to properly educate. When people go on strike, workers' unions, they consider that to be rebellion. You're saying, you know what, this contract isn't good enough. We're not getting our rights. Where does that rebellion come from? When people stand up and say, I'm not going to do it, because sometimes we can almost feel like, well, yeah, but maybe they were justified. Maybe there was a good reason for that rebellion. And I can hear that argument, and it may be justified. But when we think about God, ask yourself this question when you are hopeless, when you feel doubt, when you are faithless in your situation. Do you ever have the right? Do you ever have a justification to doubt God? Do you ever have a justification or any good reason to not believe that God is working in your best interest? Doubt, faithlessness, being hopeless, being cynical. Is there ever a reason for you, as a follower of Christ, to be this way? I want to close here by going back to what it is that they were referring to, the writers in Hebrews were referring to, Numbers 13. Numbers 13, starting in verse 26, it says, they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here's the fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and their cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. When we read in Hebrews, it is talking about the rebellion. Notice that the rebellion that he's referring to there, it isn't some insurrection. It wasn't people rising up and saying, okay, we're going to fight. No, it was faithlessness. It was God promised something to us, but we don't believe that he is actually going to protect us. Notice here, and I kind of want to focus on this part where it says, they came back and spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They had already noted that the land was good. They had already noted that the fruit there was great and it flowed with milk and honey. They knew what God promised. And yet they still spread a bad report. But it wasn't because of what God did or didn't do. It was because they doubted. You know, I say all this because I think of the world we live in today, the polarization that exists today. I think of all the negativity that the media feeds us today. There is a world out here full of darkness and no hope. Do you represent the hope? One of the criticisms, I guess you could say, I've always gotten people, they say, oh, you're just always pie in the sky and you're always looking for the silver lining. You're always looking for something positive. And I remember talking to one of my mentors years ago down in Atlanta, and I was talking about this because I was frustrated with the fact that people are like, oh my gosh, you make me sick with that, right? You're just always looking for something positive. This is just a bad situation. And he said, here's the thing. You're a son of God. How should you feel? How else should you feel about your situation? How should you approach your situation? Because if you don't have hope, then exactly who is God? Not who is your God. Is there even a God? Is the God that you're serving even who you say he is if you don't have any hope? If you can't trust that he's going to come through? I say this because in a world full of chaos and darkness and doubt, as Christians, we are expected, we are called to be the light. We're called to be the person that says, I'm going to pray that God is going to bring about that silver lining. I know that there's an end game to this, that God didn't bring us here to die, not this way. We know how the story ends, just like those of you who watch Star Wars, you know how the story ends, right? We know what happens. Only Joshua and Caleb were able to go in. It talks about that 40 years. They had to wander in the desert. A trip that should have only taken them a handful of days took them 40 years, and they didn't get in until all the faithless people were exterminated, until they were all dead. Because God refused. We think about pessimism and negativity, it limits our ability to properly know and see God's promises at work. We think about the church today. We think about what it means to be a Christian today. I was having this conversation. I was chatting with some people online, and the guy, I was saying, Christianity, Christ, discipleship, following Christ. It's not that people can't understand it, but it is not reflected in the way that people live in mass. But there's a reason for that. It's not because our society prevents it. It's not because there's anything stopping it. It's because people, individuals who make up the church, we have to be willing to represent Christ in that way. We have to be the people who always project hope that God, he's going to deliver. Be honest with yourself. Think about your family, your friends, people you're close to, people that you love, people that maybe you have reached out to and shared your faith with before. You studied the Bible with them. People who used to be Christians who have walked away from their faith. Have you lost hope that God still has a plan and a purpose for them? Have you given up hope praying for them? Have you given up hope that God is going to move in your own situation, your marriage, your children, your parents, your finances, your mental health, your addiction? Have you given up hope? Have you lost sight of a God who is faithful, even in a world that is not? I want to close here. Just a few questions I want to leave us with. First one, where is the root of your hope growing from? How have you built and cultivated your hopefulness? I ask that question in this way because very often, even if we don't consciously say it, even if it's not on the forefront of our mind, subconsciously we place our hope in our children, in our jobs, in our careers, in our marriages, in our homes, in temporary things. We place our hope in success. And then when we start losing, when we start not having so much success, we doubt as though God has changed. As though somehow God is no longer keeping the universe under control. We forget just how small Earth is in the grand scheme of things. We lose sight of the fact, based on our circumstances in the moment, we forget that our hope is rooted in something far bigger than even just our lives. We have a whole eternity. Sometimes we forget about it, but sometimes we have to ask ourselves in a very honest and sincere way, do we even believe that God is coming? Because sometimes, if we're honest, we really don't believe God's coming. We don't really believe that there's something after. That's why I appreciate so much what we've been studying in Sunday school about heaven and about hell. Because frankly, in a lot of Christian church circles, heaven and hell is not even discussed. Everything is about developing and cultivating your life here, but that's not what our hope is rooted in. I'm not trying to teach my children how to be more like Jesus just so that they can have better lives here, because guess what? It may not result in a better life here. It may not indeed result in them having all the success and riches and wealth and the many things that I would want them to have or that they would want to have. What is our hope actually rooted in? Because if it's rooted in something else, if we know that God is faithful and that we have a hope of being with him for eternity, if that's why we do what we do, then we can't allow ourselves to project doubt and cynicism. Second one. Does the life that I live and the words that I speak project my hope in God's promises to a dark and cynical world? Put another way, what does your life, your behavior, what does it say to the rest of the world about the Jesus that you claim is your Savior? When everybody around you is, you know, critical, and they're talking about politics as though whoever the president is or whoever gets elected or who has control of the Senate, or when they talk about finances and taxes and the coronavirus, when everybody is talking negative and doubtful and faithless about their situation, do you just kind of go along with it? Like, yeah, it's bad. Yeah, it's a struggle. Are you the one hope? You know, one thing about hope is you stand out when you're hopeful. You stand out when you are that beacon of light, because the world is so dark. You ever looked up at the sky? See that amazingly bright star that's all those millions of miles away? It stands out because everything around it is dark. It's empty. There's nothing there. It shines. That's what it means to be called out. That's what God expects of us. He expects us to be the light. Even if everybody at your job is negative and cynical and caught up in the world and caught up in their finances, caught up in how much of a pay raise they get, and caught up in what's going on politically. Even if everybody else is there, you're expected to project that hope that you profess. Does your life reflect that in a dark and cynical world? Third question. In an honest moment, do you believe that God will continue to be faithful to his promises? Have I ever truly allowed him to show me how faithful and reliable he is? You know, I asked that second part about allowing him to show you. A lot of times we forget that God does give us free will. That free will is extended to the point of, if you actually don't want to have faith in him, he's not going to force you. He's not going to make you do anything. But we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to allow God to show us? Let's be honest, and I can tell you for myself personally, there have been plenty of things in my life. There are things even this week as I thought about it, that as I was kind of putting this together, I was thinking, there are a lot of things that I've given up on, that I've lost hope that God is going to come through. I remember when they were doing that procedure on my eye a couple months ago, I was thinking to myself, like, you know what? I know that God is faithful, but as I was praying about it, I was thinking, you know what? I don't know if he's going to let me have full vision back. I didn't talk about it a whole lot. Frankly, I tried to block it out of my mind. I didn't even really want to pray about it a whole lot. You know, it was interesting because, you know, and people would notice and they were like, why is he squinting and only looking out of one eye? Because I kept thinking, God, please let it come back. I was doubting. I would get a text. I get a call. Kay would always, it was like every, she's like, how's your eye? It's getting better. We're praying for you. Me and Leroy, we prayed today. We prayed about, like, prayed about your eye. See, this is the type of thing that I have to be willing to let God work. I have to be willing to see that as God showing me that he is faithful. It was never an issue of, well, you know, I want you to be permanently blind in your right eye. Now, it could have been, but that wasn't what God wanted. He wanted to show me that he is faithful. He wanted me to see that there's a lesson in everything. He wanted to show Leroy and Kay that their prayers got to him and that he was faithful and that he heard them. We have to ask ourselves in an honest moment, do we actually believe that God is going to be faithful to his promises? Are we allowing him? Are we rejecting him? Are we pushing back? Because we don't want to see the failure. We don't want the rejection. So we've stopped reaching out to our loved ones. We've stopped inviting them to church. We've stopped studying the Bible. We've stopped going after those things that we used to believe that God was going to come through and deliver. Have we stopped because God is no longer in the business of delivering on his promises? Or have we just given up hope? And finally, have I developed a hard heart towards hope? Have I become hopeless and reasoned it away under the guise of being realistic? I want to close it there because you notice it talked about being hard-hearted. This is a heart issue. It's not about, well, I'm just being realistic and these are the facts on the ground and this is the situation that we're facing and this is the reality of it. The reality of it is I don't have this and I can't do this and I'm not strong enough to do this and I'm not young enough to do this and I don't have these relationships anymore and this person is turned away and all of the negative things, those things are real. But have you developed a hard heart? Because that's what kept God's people out of the promised land. That's what they, in the book of Hebrews, that's what they were being warned about in this church. Do not get a hard heart. As negative and dark and cynical and problematic as the world is that we live in right now, our God is still faithful. And there is still reason to have hope. Are you someone who is committed to continuing to placing your hope in the one true Savior that this world has?